This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Happy holidays. This is the DRF Players Podcast. What do we want to call this, guys? The year-end special?
Yeah, it's the holiday special.
The holiday special?
Yeah, it's sort of our year-end alternative to the Eclipse Awards one, which we'll do sometime in early 2015.
The voices you just heard were Peter Thomas Fornatel, Mike Hogan, I am Matt Bernier. And we've got a little list of things. We want to differentiate this from the Eclipse Awards. The Eclipse Awards, like Mike just said, those are going to be in January. We're going to have a show dedicated to that when we get there. This is more of just kind of fun fodder, kind of horseplayer-ish sort of things that we're going
to
chop up.
Things horseplayers might want to talk about at the end of a long year of wagering.
That's right. And we've got a bunch of categories. And we would like to see some sort of feedback on Twitter, I think.
Absolutely. Let people chime in on Twitter with their own answers to any and all of these categories. You can find me at @loomsboldly.
Mike?
At DRF Formulator.
At @Bernier_Matt. Those are the three Twitter handles. We'll have all sorts of stuff up there. And this is going to be coinciding with opening day at Santa Anita for the meet. So
one of the most fun days, I always think, of racing for the year. In the old days, the pre-DRF Players Podcast days, pre-getting way too into horse racing tournaments days, I would actually take a break from the Breeders' Cup to that 26th opening day at Santa Anita. So I'd come back in. It would be sort of like my last Christmas present to myself. It's like, time to get back into racing.
Back into it, yeah. And they've got a great card all set up, and we'll see what the fields end up looking like. But Shared Belief is planning on coming back in the Malibu, and there's going to be some other good racing going on. So that'll be interesting to see. But that's, you know, that'll be later on in the afternoon. This is what we got right now. We've got a bunch of categories. We're going to start. The first one is going to be the worst bet of the year. Okay, now we each will have our own opinions on these. Mike?
You want me to start?
I think you should start. You've got a good one.
Okay. Well, so mine has to do with not necessarily putting a large wager on a horse that did not run well, but it has to do with not capitalizing my opinion in order to save a few dollars, and it kept me from cashing big, and it goes back to the Jockey Club Gold Cup. I had two strong opinions in the race. I felt Tonalist was the most likely winner, and I thought Long River actually had a chance to outrun his odds, and I didn't think he'd be 50-1. So I actually put money across the board on Long River, and I did a few different superfecta plays where I used Long River, Wicked Strong, and Zevo underneath Tonalist. And one of the superfecta plays, and I probably put in supers maybe $20 in. But one of them was an $8 super where I did Tonalist on top, Long River and Wicked Strong second, Zevo, Long River, Wicked Strong third, Zevo, Long River, Wicked Strong, Stefanozzi for fourth. That cost me $8. If I'd spent $4 more to put Zevo in for second as well, it would have cashed for $9,000.
Ooh.
So I hope you spent that $4 well.
I did. I got a $4 falafel there at the falafel stand.
So, I mean, it's one of those things where you really have to weigh. We're going to be talking more about multi-race bets in the new year. But you really have to weigh you've got to do a proper cost-benefit analysis. Because what we're not doing here is saying, oh, well, that's why you should box. Because you're not talking about boxing.
No.
You're just talking about using your own logic to upgrade a horse one position for, really, I mean, I guess if you look at it in percentage terms, you're not talking about, it's significant, right? I mean, you're talking about, if you're just looking at the percentage, you're talking about spending half again as much money. But if you look at the overall investment and what that investment can bring back, that's a time where you spend the extra $4.
Right, yeah, at the time, I was certainly not expecting Rajiv Mirage to get thrown off of Wicked Strong and finish out of that. I thought Wicked Strong would be likely in one of the top four positions. But obviously that did not happen. And my opinion of Long River hitting the board at what turned out to be 50-1 was really what ended up making that superfecta pay.
Right. So why not do, I mean, just for example, I mean, I'm not a superfecta expert in betting, but one idea I love about supers to ensure that they pay is you take a look at like a reverse key type strategy. If you know Long River's the key to the bat, you make a bet not with a spread in fourth, but just with Long River in fourth with contenders, 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 or tonalist contenders, contenders, key your big bomberoo. Maybe you also put the bomber in third as well and then bet him win to place just in case, you know, if you think there's any chance he's going to win or place. These are the kind of strategies that to me have always made sense in the super.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing I could have done is some smaller 10 centers, 20 centers here and there, because that's the other nice thing about the super is you can reduce your bankroll in order to increase your coverage. And even if I'd cashed it for 10 cents, that's $900.
Yeah. Buys a few pizzas.
Right. So part
of a lot of falafels, right?
Yeah, right. A lot of falafels. The other, you know, the other factor there, too, was we had friends in from out of town, and I actually was not playing any other races that day, and I put my bets in on my phone. And didn't even watch any of the other races and didn't watch any of... I didn't even realize that I missed out on that chance because I watched the race and then I turned it off and went and made dinner. I didn't even realize that they had disqualified Moreno from fourth and brought Stefanozzi up from fifth to finish in the fourth spot. I just realized, oh, I wouldn't have had it anyway because I didn't have whatever the Moreno was, the 12 for fourth, you know.
So you really did get to enjoy your four extra dollars.
I really did. Yeah, well, I did. And then the next day, that's when the pain sank in. So
that's tough, Mr. Fornatel.
Well, your story is one where you can, you know, say part of it might have had to do with the fact that you had other stuff going on that day. Mine, this one was so stupid, and you're going to appreciate this too, because I know half the world had this winner. But I stubbornly, in all my wagers, decided in the Whitney to stand against Moreno.
Okay.
I wish I could recall why. This is part of the reason why I'm going to put this down as my sort of worst wagering decision of the year, is because looking back at it, I can't even remember why. And it gets worse because I went down to the paddock and, you know, that race going into the race was sort of expected to be Palace Malice's next logical step on his way to, you know, being horse of the year or whatever. And what was one of those things, I don't have a specific thing to point to as to why I wasn't crazy about Palace Malice in the paddock there, but it was just, it was something where I came away from the paddock not wanting to single Palace Malice, and yet still stubbornly remained against the projected lone speed Moreno. It's just, I probably made worse bets over the year, but there's no bet I kicked myself for more than that blowing up everything for me on that day.
And that's, I mean, I can understand because a buddy of mine, Dan, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, Tordman, he works for America's Best Racing. He and I were down in the winner's circle because I had just done something with NBC for the Whitney. And he liked Moreno as well. But for some reason, he was alive in a pick four and he did not include Moreno.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I don't know.
At least I didn't like him.
The problem then became obviously Moreno wins, and he got money back, but I felt terrible for him. My goodness, what did this thing, what would it have paid? Saratoga seems to be the bane of a lot of people's existence. For as much as we love it, there's a reason it's Saratoga. There's a reason that the payouts are usually astronomical. Mine is, it's a worst beat. Going back to the Jockey Club Gold Cup, or a worse bet, but it piggybacks from the Travers, and it involves VE Day, where in the Travers, Dan Illman and I had done a live preview show that went up online, archived, and one of the questions we had gotten from someone on Twitter was a live long shot in the Travers, and I had said VE Day, because in the Curlin, he'd never change leads, and he's very green, and da-da-da-da-da. And if he changes leads, he can run forever. So we get to Travers Day, and I was all in on Mr. Speaker. That didn't work. But the fact that I didn't have anything on VE Day, and he was 19-1, so there's a mistake. One major error.
That doesn't make sense.
We come back in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and I, for some reason, I was all in on VE Day. Because I thought that he was just going to continue getting better. He was unbeaten on dirt. He looked like a monster. He galloped out great. He was this, that, and the other thing. Castellano stays aboard. And
probably weren't anticipating the way that the winner ended up running there, too. Many people thought he was going to be a lot closer.
Well, I didn't think Tonalist would be coming from out of the clouds, and I don't think VE Day really had any sort of an excuse. But I should have known better. Looking back at it, that big jump from the Curlin to the Travers from a buyer standpoint, I believe in bounce. And I think the horse bounced to the moon. He ran 6th, 7th, 8th, something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. But it was one of those where after the race is over and all the other things that had gone on that day in the race, and I'm looking back and I'm going through the form on Formulator, and it just kind of like slapped me in the face. And I'm like, what are you doing? Why, of all horses, why are you unloading on this one that is coming out of a 3-year-old sort of a race? A lot of people would argue that Wicked Strong and Tonalist ran the better races than VE Day did, just based on the pace.
I would argue that based on race, and that was
exactly my assessment. That's why I tossed VE Day in my wagers, because I feel like he really got the pace flow set up in the Travers.
So. And that was me sitting there just looking at it going, what are you doing? What are you doing? But so in an odd way, I have an odd double between the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the Travers, because I should have cashed in the Travers and did not, because I was an idiot, and in the Jockey Club Gold Cup I didn't cash because I was an idiot. So the common denominator, no money and I'm an idiot. So there you go. There's the commonality in things. So those are a few of our worst bets, what we consider our worst bets. If you have worst bets, obviously tweet them out, use the hashtag DRFPod. We want to hear about all that stuff.
And maybe one of them will involve our Money Burner of the Year, which is a segment coming up later.
Foreshadowing.
I like the foreshadowing there.
The second category for our year-end sort of show, holiday edition, holiday special, is the toughest beat of the year. Now, this, no tears, gentlemen. No tears. I'm going to try not to tear up either. But the toughest beat of the year, we don't really need to explain what a tough beat
is, do we? No, I think that's, if there's one thing horse players like talking about, it's tough beats. And for this one, since we're not doing a tournament talk per se on this show, this is going to be the closest we get to it. Because for me, the toughest beat of the year was not one that happened to me. It's one that I saw, and from a guy I'm very fond of, was a big help with my book, The Winning Contest Player, and just a generally great guy who I've learned so much from talking to him over the year. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. He should have won the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge.
Oh, wow. See, this goes back. We're bringing Byron up again. My God.
We can't go far without talking about Byron. And it's not going to get easier for you over the next few weeks. Or me, really.
It's only going to get tougher. Go on. I'm sorry.
So Dennis, in that race, had all manner of wagers surrounding Toast of New York, would have been DQ'd into a $100 trifecta there. We're talking about a beat. I don't know the exact numbers between what he wagered and what he would have won in the BCBC, but we are talking about a minimum of somewhere between a quarter of a million and $500,000, just if the stewards had done the right thing and taken the horse down.
That's a tough pill to swallow. That's one where it's difficult to come back from, I would think.
Yeah.
For many people, yes. For a guy like Dennis, he was playing the pick six carryover the next day.
God bless him.
Such a pro. I mean, his line to me, and I think I wrote about this in my blog on drf.com, was, yeah, that I had a little bit of a sleepless night over that one, he said. But that's for a guy like that, that's as far as it goes, because the next day it's all business and he's back into it and he's continued playing tournaments. And when you've been in the game for a while, you see so much stuff. You can you basically have two choices. You're going to bounce back from frustration, or you're going to be out of the game.
That's yeah. But credit to him if he can bounce back from that, because there's a chance I'd still be crying. Still, I would just tear upon tear upon tear.
Well, let's hope the next day in the pick six carryover he
got his money back.
Well, you not only got his money back, but let's hope you didn't hold it against Baffert and Kalim Shah, and he singled Dortmund as the key to his play.
Fair point. Mike, tough beat.
So my tough beat of the year, we mentioned Saratoga a couple times. It goes back to Saratoga.
We'll be talking about it a few more times. Before all said,
this was another Saturday. I believe it was a Saturday series of races. And again, I was out doing things, was not playing the races. I actually put my wagers in prior and then went to Central Park, walked around, you know, did some stuff with the family. So I didn't watch any of the races. But there were three horses in consecutive races that I loved. two of them were long shots, and one was more like a 4 or 5 to 1 shot. So I actually ended up putting a straight. I didn't even do a spread pick three. I did a straight pick three, $2 straight pick three, single, single, single. I did rolling $2 doubles to a 20 to 1 to a 20 to 1 to morning line. I didn't know what I was getting in terms of real odds, and I did win bets. Only, I think I did a win place on one of the three. So the three horses were Mr. Z in, and I don't remember, was it the Saratoga Special? It was the race against Big Trouble.
Yep.
And then in the next race, it was Fade to Black, who was stepping on the turf for the first time for Dominic Schettino. And then the third leg was North Star Boy in a turf allowance. And Mr. Z lost a photo to Big Trouble, and there was an inquiry, and they made no change. Fade to Black lost a photo, and there was an inquiry, and they made no change. And North Star Boy won at 5 to 1. And I did not put a win bet on North Star Boy because I was like, I'm 5 to 1, and I'm covered in the doubles. And so I don't know. I mean, it ended up being 11 to 1 to 17 to 1 to 5 to 1. I don't know what the rolling doubles would have paid. I don't know what the pick three would have paid, but should have, could have, would have.
I wish I could remember the DQs. Were they justified? Were the decisions of the stewards justified there? I mean, can you be objective about it? Or Matt, do you remember?
The Mr. Z one, I think they ruled that there was... There was definitely a lot of bumping, and it might have been both at fault.
I was going to say, I remember, because I was here in the office that day during that race, because I hit the exact in that race, sorry. but yeah, I thought all of the pinballing, because there was a lot of contact down the lane in that one, and I thought, you can't take one down.
Right.
I mean, they were all bouncing off each other.
Objectively, I think that one you leave up. Objectively, I think Fade to Black had to get moved up. I can't remember the name of the horse that they left up that beat her. But she, I don't know if they rule on hurting. I mean, she was getting pushed out.
They never take a lot hurting down in New York, ever. Yeah.
But even still, there was bumping, and she was getting pushed. You know, I'm just surprised. She lost by a nose. It was closer than the Mr. Z one. The contact was not equal like in the Mr. Z one. I'm just surprised watching the replay. I'm surprised they left up, made no change. But what are you gonna do?
It's a tough game. I mean, a lot of these bad beat stories, they're very similar. It's right. It's like I was supposed to win and I didn't.
Yeah, right. You never hear it the other way when you got lucky occasionally because someone stayed up or
nobody remembers that.
Nobody remembers it. Right. You only remember the terrible ones.
Right.
My tough beat is it's an odd one because I still made some money. But going back to the Belmont Stakes, Dan and I had done a pick four video for the Belmont, the final four races on Belmont Stakes Day. It really has nothing to do with the pick four, but it has to do with the horses I used in the Belmont Stakes for the leg. In order, my preference was Metal Count, Commissioner, Tonalist, California Chrome. My big plays were Commissioner and Metal Count. So obviously the nose loss for Commissioner, and I had 20 across the board on Commissioner and on Metal Count. Commissioner was 26 to 1, Metal Count was 23 to 1, something like that. So the nose loss obviously hurt something significant. But then okay, it is what it is. It was $400 or $500, whatever it was. And then a couple minutes, hours go by, and I remember back to the sheet that I had filled out, and I didn't play any exotics in the race. But when you go back and you look, and I know Chrome Dead Heated with Wicked Strong for fourth, but when you have the four runners that make up the super, and the super paid $7,000 to $8,000, that's a tough. Actually, no, it may have only been four that day. I'm trying to remember, but maybe the other part with Wicked Strong may have been the 7,000 or 8,000 one, but with California Chrome, 4,000, with the two horses that I really loved, Metal Count and Commissioner, and I'm still sore. I don't know, the loss with Commissioner is bad enough. I don't know how Metal Count doesn't win the Belmont Stakes. Watch that race over and over and over again. He sits the perfect trip, turn it for home. He has a lane. I know people say Tonalist may have crowded him a little bit. I don't care. At that point, he's supposed to win. He runs third. He ran third. What the hell happened?
I watched that tape, and I don't know. I don't know what this was watching through the binoculars, too, because I was out there that day. I know it. This might sound crazy. I really thought Tonalist had it the whole length of the stretch.
Really?
I did.
I started panicking about 100 yards short of the wire because I said, I can't tell you what I was saying to myself. But it was a matter of, I'm going to get beat. I'm going to get beat. But it was only for the final 100 yards. Because the fact that once they hit the top of the lane and nobody was really making up any significant ground, all of a sudden I thought, we might get there at 26-1 with Todd. Todd at 26-1 in the Belmont Stakes. Castellano.
I should have rewatched for this before I say this, but I felt like it was a whole lot of paddling and one horse running.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it kind of was. It wasn't, you know, the Belmont. How often do we see a truly powerful finish in the Belmont? I mean, not since I've been watching racing or paying attention to it and going back. I don't know, a Fleet Alex?
Yeah, I was going to say a Fleet Alex.
Maybe. That was the last I can remember.
The Curl and Rags finish with it.
That was pretty
strong.
Good, too. You're right. Yeah, the two of them, when they were duking it out, what was that, 07?
Oh, for me and years is tough, but that feels
that
like the right
time. I think it was 07, yeah. So that's a good one, though. They were both finishing very willingly. But other than that, it's usually a stagger fest home.
Yeah.
And but, yeah, in that respect, that one, although I did make a few dollars, it should have been.
When you write down the four horses that basically complete the super, you're supposed to hit that.
And you got nothing. I mean, in that case, I know we don't like to box, but, I mean, even for 10 cents.
For 10 cents.
Why not box it? Yeah. You know, it comes back a couple hundred.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Especially,
could've.
You know, I generally agree. I feel like a box in a super is a saver bet, you know. But when you're able to throw out a favorite...
Well, and it wasn't even throwing out Chrome.
He was using the favorite.
I used Chrome.
Oh, okay.
I
gotcha.
Used Chrome, but knowing that my
other... I was thinking
other...
you meant Wicked Strong.
Well, yeah. I threw him out.
Okay.
But it was more the thought that I thought that Metal Count and Commissioner had legit chances of winning.
Yeah, they were both huge prices, right? Yeah. I mean,
26 and 23 or 22.
It's like, that same old thing like we were talking about recently with the Mike's case, where with supers, to me... It's like you got to use those horses to key those horses in various spots. You're not just trying to hit the bet. You're trying to hit the bet in a combination where it's going to pay.
And those, truly, that day would have been the kind of day where I would have keyed those horses on top and, or throughout
all the way through.
All the way through.
Which is sure. A total option. Sure.
Because those were the two, my one two right. Was Metal Count Commissioner. I thought they both had a huge, huge shot. I thought Tonal was coming off the Peter Pan had a big shot, but I didn't think he was going to be near the price of those horses. And then Chrome, maybe he is just a freak. I don't know.
Because the way that super pays is if you have any horse other than California Chrome on top, it's going to pay because so many people are constructing their supers, singling him on top, and then using whatever their price horse is underneath.
Trying to get quote-unquote value.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's why even with him dead heating for fourth, with him in, it still paid like $4,000 for a buck.
Right.
And with him out, it was $8,000.
Right. Because many people, if they were using him, they were not using him in the fourth spot. They were assuming he was going to be in the top.
People don't box as much, I think.
No. I mean, I just.
No, but that's sound logic, I think. You know. So those are a couple of our, you know, and that's one of those categories, though, tough beat, where, I mean, heck, you probably have a tough beat a week.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, sure.
I mean, but those are just a couple of the ones that stick out.
The ones that you remember by the end of the year.
By the end of the year, right. Calendar year.
Yeah.
You know, so this one now, we're on ride of the year. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. What do you think one of the better rides of the year was in any sort of race, whether it was a claimer, it was a stakes, whatever it was?
I can't make up my mind on this one, so I want to go last if I can to see maybe you guys will take one of my ones and then I can use one of the others rather than I don't want to come here and talk about three rides. So, Matt, how about you? Have you started us yet?
Now, this is one where I guess it's a little bit – the horse didn't win, but I thought the ride was as good as you'll ever see. And it's from my guy, Frankie Dettori.
Oh, yes.
In the Beverly D, I believe it was, with Stephanie's Kitten, where he navigated through about 17 different holes – in the span of about 3/16 of a mile, He gave her every chance to get up. She couldn't quite get there because she had too much to overcome, and Euro Charlene won that
serious
day.
Horse at one.
Serious horse.
Yeah.
But I thought the ride that Frankie gave that day was about as flawless as you could ask for. The only other one that I considered, but then again, there were other extenuating circumstances where as good as – I thought the ride on Texas Red was great in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile because – I all along thought Kent Sorma was going to go loop wider than wide on the far turn, but he actually split a couple horses before angling outside, so I thought that was a very good ride. But for me, the award has to go to Flying Dismount Frankie Dettori.
I like it.
In the Beverly D.
You know, and Pete, I'm kind of with you. I could not come to a single decision. You know, there were a lot of rides that I liked, but... you know, I'm not really one to knock a jockey when they, you know, being a jockey's got to be one of the toughest jobs in the world.
As we've said many times, the ambulance follows you around when you're at work.
Right. So I don't knock them when they don't do what I expect. But you know, I'm not so focused on the way the jockey rides. I often don't separate it from the horse. So in my mind, I don't have one that's really jumping out at me. You know, I mean, I did like Rosario's ride on Seek Again in the 4-star Dave.
Mm-hmm. He went through a hole that wasn't there.
Yeah,
right.
You know, so there are a few that I think of. You know, I mean, I like the way Victor guided California Chrome out of trouble in the Derby. But, you know, I mean, I'm not sure I could pick one as my true ride of the year.
Okay.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I'm going to mention one that's going to take a little different look at the question, and maybe you guys will agree with me, maybe you won't. But I want to give this to a rider who I believe got a horse the win when he wasn't, not necessarily wasn't the best horse in that race, but just if you look back at the body of work, got a horse that probably is a bit below the horse that he beat because of a cunning ride. And I'm talking about Jose Lascano on Mr. Speaker in the Belmont Derby, producing the horse
That's
at just the right time to sort of get the drop on Adelaide.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, what Adelaide went on to do since then has been pretty impressive stuff. Won the Secretariat on our shores at Arlington. Then went ahead and ran very well in the pre-Neil, a key prep race to the Arc, and then went to Australia and won the Cox Plate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a truly world-class turf horse. And Mr. Speaker is a good horse, but I really think it was the ride on Mr. Speaker that made the difference that day. And if it was just the two of them locked in battle through the whole stretch, Adelaide, probably on class, just manages to hold Mr. Speaker off. So that's where I'm going to go with my ride of the year.
I think it's a great call because I remember that day being at Belmont and watching the whole, to my horror, because that was the first day that I'd gotten off of Mr. Speaker because I thought his effort in the grass race, I can't remember what it is prior to that, I was like, yeah, that's just really, really, you know, subpar. And I had liked him way back.
Was that the Palm Beach?
No, the Palm Beach, and then there was one at Belmont prior to that. And the Belmont one was the one that really like turned me off to him. And then he came through that day at 23.50.
The previous race, gosh, I don't know the abbreviation. The Pennon Ridge?
Yeah, the Pennine Ridge, yep.
Pennine, there you go. And then before that, the Lexington.
The Lexington.
Smashed up the Lexington.
Loved him in the Lexington. Loved him in the Palm Beach where he, I thought, was rank and had a bad trip and lost a Gallo Award.
Right.
Down at Gulfstream. But, yeah, that was the first day that I was off him in the Belmont Derby. And then to my horror.
That's always tough.
Tremendous ride from Jose Lascano that day. So I think that's definitely a fitting. But, again, another one where chime in. Let us know.
Where do we go from here, guys?
I think from here we go to this is the wagering, the gambling part of the moment of the year. We're splitting moment of the year into two separate things where the horse player and the fan. We're going to start with the horse player where what was your gambling – wagering, what was your moment of the year for you personally?
Matt, you got to start with this one. I think I know where you're going. And if not, it's mine for you.
Well, I mean, for me, it only happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was the final two races at Woodbine, the Aqueduct Contest.
Your own personal cold double to give a little hat tip to Jason Blewett.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. A little Save the Park and then Collins Nightingale. I mean, that for me, that you know, for me clearly is my moment of the year from the wagering side of things. I mean, other than that, there's really nothing that comes close to that for me.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
And if you want full detail, you can watch the video.
That's right. Our video is up there.
That video is one of the most entertaining things I've watched come out of DRF.
Oh, my God. That's so cool to hear you say that. Yeah. Excellent.
We had fun with it, too, I thought. You know.
For me, you know, it was a little bit of a rough Saratoga meet starting out. Just one of those things, just lots of 3 or 4 in the pick four and silly wagering decisions like the one I talked about earlier. But Travers Day, it all came to be for me. Was in a great spot. Some friends and I, some friends from L.A., Lower Albany, and I rented the area above the Shake Shack to hang out and be a little bit away from the crazy, chaotic fray that can be on a Travers Day. And that was just a race where I looked at it and was sort of hoping there was a scenario in which the other jockeys would get aggressive and not allow Byron to walk on the lead, and had the prescience to throw VE Day in there, figuring he had a chance to be the best closer. And sure enough, when he just barely got up, it took a losing meet and turned it into a winning one, and definitely stands out for me as my favorite wagering day of the year.
Beautiful. Mike?
So mine was also at Saratoga, so it's kind of the tough beat and the best.
That's Saratoga in a nutshell.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It helped make Saratoga a good meet for me, because otherwise I would have just been... Because I also, the one takedown I had was I had that 50-something-to-1 horse that deservedly came down, the Albertroni.
I would have left that alone.
Well.
I don't think it affected the outcome, but.
Anyway, we won't talk about that. So I had, it was a pick three. It was, I can't even remember the favorite, but there was a favorite I did not like in the first leg of the pick three, and I liked a horse named Macaroon, who was getting back to sprinting on the turf, and I thought that could possibly get the lead and beat the favorite. Macaroon's I think it's Kieran McLaughlin with it's a Darley or a Godolphin.
It's a Godolphin. I had picked that horse in the, what is the Phillies version of the race at Keeneland?
Right. Yeah, she went to Keeneland after she won this race.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The Alcibiades? No.
No, that's the 2-year-old.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So anyway, for whatever reason, I just, like, right prior to the race, I thought, okay, I really liked Lady Eli in the third leg of this pick three. And it was a big field. And at the time, you had no idea how anyone was going to get bet. And I think in the morning line and in the pick threes, the other Chad Brown, which was Kerjillion, was getting bet more. But I liked Lady Eli, so I put in multiple pick threes. I did essentially a straight $2 pick three using Macaroon and singling Lady Eli in the end and using two horses in between. I did another one where I spread in the first leg and beat the favorite, used Macaroon, spread in the second leg and singled the Lady Eli. So I ended up hitting the pick three for $4 or $5 to Lady Eli, and it paid... $6 or $7 for a buck.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that.
And it was all about beating that favorite in the first leg. And then, fortunately, I landed on the horse that ended up being the live one in the really wide open, at least, you know, 14-horse turf maiden race where none of them had raced before.
That's the definition of value. At that point, you've got so much equity. When you're locked in at whatever the equivalent price was, 3-1, maybe a little more.
No, it ended at 7-5, I think.
Yeah, maybe even shorter.
Yeah.
I can look that up actually real quick.
Yeah. But that's a good point, though, like leading into when we do come back from the break, talking about the multi-race sort of things. Like you said, beating a favorite in a multi-race sequence, not only are you trying to stay alive, but it's more or less you're trying to have other people get knocked out.
Right. And
it's a little bit like a tournament in that respect.
Kind of, yeah.
And I kind of, you know, I ended up kind of going all in on Lady Eli. If Lady Eli didn't win, I cash for nothing.
Right.
You know, and it didn't really cost me much. Even though I had it a few times, I probably spent less than $20 on the pick three sequence. So
that's good.
How did you know to single Lady Eli there? Did you have a formulator stand? Had you heard some scuttlebutt?
What it was, well, you know, of course, using formulator, no. I had no scuttlebutt, but no scuttlebutt, but I liked her breeding. I really liked her breeding. You know, this she was the one in that race I felt stood out the most and wanted to go long on the turf most. And of course, you know, that she was trained by Chad Brown didn't hurt, and I liked her better than the other Chad Brown horse.
Good read by you.
So
beautiful, beautiful. Those are our horse player wagering side of things, where we've those are the things that stuck out to us for the year. From the fan side of things, from the racing fan, strictly from the fan side, we'll start with Mike. We'll go to Pete right around the horn. What is your fan moment of the year?
You know, it's tough to not think Wise Dan. You know,
I was going to say, we might have a double on this
one. Yeah,
it really is. So I was almost trying to reach and think, okay, you know, if it's not Wise Dan, who is it? You know, but really that's where it was. And I'm actually not going to go with Wise Dan in his first race back. I'm going to go with, and I don't even remember which race it was. I actually played him out of pick threes in the race where Grand Arch finished second.
Which we talked about on here, the Keeneland race.
You're right.
Yes.
You're right.
So that was the race.
Shadwell Turf Mile.
Yes. Shadwell Turf Mile. I had essentially thought that race, his win in the prior race with Optimizer finishing second, felt like it came back really weak. And I was thinking he was vulnerable. And so I did pick threes where I was using five or six horses, but not Wise Dan. I had Seek Again. I had Grand Arch. So if Grand Arch holds on from a horse player standpoint, that might have even been my moment of the year, because I would have. I had a win bet on him. I was covered. But from a racing fan standpoint, I was really excited to see Wise Dan beat me. That was the one time where I mean, of course I would have loved the money, but it was just great to see the horse run the way he did.
For me, I got to go with him coming back in the Brook for two main reasons. One, it seemed that Turf Classic really raised some questions about him. You know, he barely won. He kind of won on class that day. So there were questions about the horse anyway to me going forward from that effort. And then he ends up with the emergency colic story, the kind of thing that sometimes you expect to hear, okay, unfortunately, he's been retired. So to have him come back, and not just to come back, but to come back at Saratoga and to do what he did in the Brook. I understand what you're saying about the form of the race, but just to have been able to come back at all at that venue with that crowd on hand and do what he did and show, hey, wait, guys, maybe the old champ still has a little bit left in the tank. That's the stuff of spine tingles. And I got to go with Wise Dan for my moment of the year.
I can't argue with Wise Dan as anyone's, in whatever fashion it is, in being the moment of the year, because he is. He's a champion, and he's one of the best that we've had over the, you know, in the most in recent memory. My moment of the year isn't here in the States. It's over in France in the Arc with Trev.
Good call.
Where she had been, so many people had kind of questioned where she was, and was she over the hill, and was it time, you know, for her to go off and do her own thing after that, and to see her really rebound in full form and really strut her stuff for the second year in a row. It's nice to see that now they're going for the unprecedented third coming up next year. I've always, you know, we've made a joke about it before, but I love any of these European fillies. I don't just whether it's her, whether it's Dank, whether it's who's the other one I'm missing?
Oh, I mean, there's so many. What are you thinking from this year specifically?
Yeah, the Fugue. The Fugue.
Yeah. Oh,
She's the Fugue's probably my favorite of them all. I can remember her name. But just the fact that she came back the way that she did, she ran on and really showed everyone that she still got it a little bit. And it's nice to see those kind of, you know.
And that race, too. I'm so glad you brought up the Arc, because it's so amazing. I've heard U.S. handicappers talk about the Arc when a horse comes from the Arc and runs over here. Talk about the Arc like it's a prep race or something, and the Breeders' Cup Turf is the goal. Uh-uh. In Europe, that is the end-all, be-all. To do what Trev ended up doing there in the most prestigious turf race in the world, I think we can say.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, look, I love American racing and I love the Breeders' Cup, but anyone that thinks that the Arc is not the grass race of the year in the world, I think you're just sorely mistaken.
It's the Super Bowl. I wish they let geldings in, but, you know, that's a whole other topic.
It is. But that's, yeah, I just thought that was a very cool cool moment that, you know, she came back, she did her thing, and we'll see. Maybe she can do it again next year.
That would be, I mean,
truly, that'd be crazy.
She and Wise Dan come back.
Oh, my goodness. Could you imagine that?
Plenty of stuff for a racing fan to get excited about, to look forward to in 2015.
Surely. And the first thing that we'll start off with is going to be the NHC. We're going to get, that's not going to be too far away. We're about a month out, a little more than that.
Yes, I mean, this will be, well, January 22nd, 23rd. But so when we come back, the next show after this one will be January 7th.
Right.
So that'll be really on the heels of it.
Yeah, we'll be about two and a half weeks out of the big show, the big dance, the NHC. And anyone, if you haven't qualified yet, you still have a couple opportunities?
Well, yeah, there will be. The one that I'll mention here is there's going to be a last chance tournament at Treasure Island. When this airs, I'd have to look if there's going to be any more online qualifying opportunities. You can always check out nhcqualified.com to get a full schedule of those. But if nothing else, if you want to come out to Vegas and be an optimist, there's the last chance tournament going to be happening right before the NHC, and it's going to be a particularly good value this year from what I understand. So
beautiful.
It should be pretty cool.
All right. That's going to be the big thing that we look forward to, the first thing in 2015 of many, many fun and exciting things going forward. Happy holidays. Have a happy, healthy, safe new year and the whole nine. Pete, take us away.
May you win all your photos.